Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Thank you. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon, the 1st of June, with weather to suit. 51551 ray@rte.ie, or you can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Did I say that already? I'm a bit flustered for the reason that I've had to do business with the bank this morning, and my bank, I'm not going to name them really, but they've introduced new security systems. And we were talking to Connor Pope yesterday about cybersecurity, and he gave us great advice, actually. You can listen back on podcast. And banks and other organisations have to introduce stricter security measures to make sure we're all safe from the people who sit in offices and try and scam us out of money. Anyway, as a result of that, I was on the app and doing a bit of business, and then the app froze. And this is where it gets complicated. So I said, that's fine, I'll go online. You know, go to bank online. So you go online. What happens with the new security? They send a code or something to your app, but the app's frozen. So now the app's not working and you can't go online. So you're frozen out of your bank, away from your money. And that's been the story all morning. And you know how frustrating that is. You know how frustrating that is. And do you have a name of a person? No. There was a time when you walked into the branch of a bank and everybody knew your name. It was like Cheers. Don't wanna go, everybody knows your name. And you went up to the cashier and they go, how are you today? I'm fine. How are you, Mary? Yeah, great. Saw you out walking the other day. Remember that time? And then the odd time, depending on if your balance was in the red or the black, the manager might come out and say hello to you. Probably more likely to do it if it was in the red than in the black. And those were the old days in the 70s and the 80s, when we used to have one of Mammy's salads. Now, we were talking yesterday at length about coleslaw, and it got us talking then about salads. And I was remembering, the old days before salads got posh and fancy. And we knew about things like halloumi and all sorts of things. Anyway, so today, after I was frustrated with the bank, I decided I'd make one up just for the younger people who wouldn't know what an old school salad looked like. So I made it up and took a picture. Well, it's created all sorts of controversy, ladies and gentlemen. There it is, the scallions, three scallions, not cut up, bit of coleslaw, a leaf of lettuce, three bits of tomato, hard-boiled egg, some rolled up cooked ham and beans. So it was all going swimmingly well until the beans. Seemingly people have never seen beans with a salad before. That's the way my mammy used to do it. It's a very, looking at it there, you know, very healthy looking. There's a lot of green on it. You have the eggs for protein, the beans for protein as well. Coleslaw is raw cabbage and carrots and onion. You know, it's a healthy thing. But they've all been talking about Enid MacLeish, Siobhan McSweeney, Louise McSherry. They're all taking me to task with the beans. Did nobody ever have cold beans with their salad ever? No? No? Was it just the thing that we did in the Darcy household? Some culinary innovation by Mary Darcy. Anyway, I'll put that, it's up there. We tweeted the picture of the salad. I think it looks great. It's nearly like modern art, the old school salad. So that's there. While we're on things domestic, there's one of those tinfoil TikTok hacks doing the rounds. Now, you see, 2 years ago, if I'd come on and said, there's an online TikTok hack doing the rounds, you'd go, what is he talking about? And some people are probably saying, what is he talking about? It's a tinfoil TikTok hack. And they're saying that if you put rolled up tinfoil into your dishwasher with your cutlery, that they come out extra shiny. Now, I don't know. I don't know. Well, what happens then? What happens? Does it break up? And then when you put your fork in your mouth, are you getting bits of tinfoil? And is that good? I don't know. And so I'm not saying you should do that. I'm just saying it's there. It's there. It's one of those things that people are talking about. The other thing they'll be talking about today and tomorrow and for a number of days after, would you swim in that pool, they'll be saying. Would you swim in the pool? What pool? The Sky Pool in London, they'll say. It's 115 feet in the air and it spans two buildings. So imagine this. Imagine this. A glass swimming pool suspended between two buildings. Ho, 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 ho. I have you now, don't I? So there's about 15 metres of glass between the two buildings. So that's the bottom of your swimming pool. So you're swimming across, doing the front crawl, and you're looking down. Yeah, yeah. You're looking down about 30 metres there. Imagine if you're up on the top of the round tower in Kildare. That's how high you are and you're swimming across. Now, most of the people in the office said, no way, no how. I'd love to do it. Love to do it. Seemingly, you have to be a member, or you have to buy a very expensive apartment or whatever to be invited in. Embassy Garden Towers. And it's the work of people who've done major structures all over the world. And it's there. It's a brilliant picture, actually. It's a brilliant picture. It just looks so futuristic. It actually looks like somebody has photoshopped it. It doesn't look real, but it is real. And people seem to be having fun in it. You'd love to do that. That's an outdoor activity. They're saying that there's going to be a lot of outdoor spa treatments this year around the country. I saw somebody mentioned from the Ice Hotel in, where is that? Is that in Sligo? And then somebody down in the cliff, what's it called? The cliff down in Ardmore and Waterford. Because of the restrictions to do with the pandemic and because of the Alpha Beta, you know, that's what they're calling them now. They're not calling it the British one and the Indian one and the whatever, the Brazilian one. It's now Alpha Beta. You're on top of that. You're on top of that. Anyway, so there's going to be spa treatments outdoors. Will we get the weather? Will we get the weather? And speaking of the pandemic, Eugene Tanham from Fir House in Dublin. I was sort of saying this yesterday, but Eugene's use of the language, and it's just so brilliantly written, this letter is, because it's probably 20 words, but it's brilliantly written. Eugene Tanham, Fir House in Dublin 24 says, "Sir, who would have thought that easing restrictions would lead people to think that restrictions were being eased?" It says it all there, doesn't it? See? Think outdoor this summer, but think the way we think, not the way you think. Yes, we're easing restrictions, but not that way. Not the way you want, the way we want. But we didn't really tell you exactly what we wanted, so you had to try and, you know, telepathically know what we were thinking. But you didn't. And then you came out, you drank, and you peed on the side of the road and all that sort of thing. And now we're shocked and horrified. Going to have to say stop. It's mad. Well done, Eugene Tanham. That's a great letter. Oh, the reviews are in on the salad. Add coriander to your coleslaw. Adds great flavour. And no beans, says Paul. Paul, coriander didn't exist in Kildare back in the 70s and 80s. Nobody knew what coriander was. I'm sorry. We always had cold beans and hot new potatoes with salad. Hey, Anne's one of the beans crew. The cold beans crew. Love strawberries with lettuce, cooked spinach and cooked tomatoes. I know it may sound manky, but I love it. It's Fiona in Cork. We have cold beans with our salads and our picnic. And yes, I would swim in that high pool any day. Have a good afternoon. Regards, Siobhan. Thanks, Siobhan. Yes! Four S's there. Beans with the salad. That's me. And I got a hard time over it too. Don't forget the salad cream. I wasn't a big fan of salad cream, Niall. So we don't have any in the house. I could have put a dollop of mayonnaise there, but I'm not a fan. London gets a sky pool. Can Dublin just get some bins? Asks Tom. Yeah. Everything is reactive in this country. That's the, you know, we're not proactive about it. I was reading yesterday about €200,000 being invested in a pilot scheme to introduce foreign languages to primary schools. And they discussed it on Drive Time yesterday evening. And people are going, isn't this great? Isn't this great? €200,000. It's pittance. People have been saying for decades that we should have a modern European language in our primary schools, like most other European countries, if not all. And it hasn't happened. And now they've a budget of €200,000. It's laughable. It's laughable. And we're living in a world where the President of the United States of America is saying he wants this universal corporate tax of 15%. So our advantage with our 12.5% corporate tax is going to be swept from under our feet. And we won't have that advantage. So we'll need to be offering up highly qualified, multilingual workforce. So we should be investing millions, if not a billion, in getting ourselves up to speed with languages like Chinese and Spanish and French and all of the languages that are all over the world that we most of us can't speak. That's what we should be doing. So that when we don't have the 12.5% corporate tax anymore, at least we can say, look at us, we have this highly qualified, technical and multilingual tax workforce. Come, invest in our country. 200,000, me eye. 200, like it's really laughable, isn't it? Anyway, here we go. It's time for our quiz of today, 1st of June. 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years, decades, centuries, and a prize too. Are we back to this? We are. Yes, we're back. Yep. Radisson Blu in Cork. No, that's a mistake. That's a mistake. I'll tell you about the prize later on. But we're looking for two people to come on and answer our qualifying question. We're looking for two people to come on and answer our qualifying question. And today's question is, we heard earlier that the Rose of Tralee is not going ahead this year. In which Irish county would you find the town of Tralee? 1850 715 900. 1850 715 900. In which Irish county would you find the town of Tralee? And speaking of which, Dahi O'Shea is going to be talking to us very shortly. Dahi O'Shea. Looking forward to that chat. 5 on 5 5 on ray at rte.ie. Good afternoon. Beach Boys from Pet Sounds, God Only Knows. On RT Radio 1, 5 on 5 5 on or ray at rte.ie. The cold beans controversy continues. My mother always had cold beans in our salads, and that's when Heinz had potato salad, vegetable salad and coleslaw in tins. That's Ian. And imagining the beans in the salad was bad enough, but seeing it in reality on Twitter is nothing short of an abomination, says Jackie. That's a bit strong, an abomination. My mother always put beans in our salads, loved her salads. My husband didn't know what to make of it when he first was presented with one, but he loves it now, says Therese. And my brother brought bean sandwiches to school in the 60s. Bread got very soggy, though, says Bernadette and Carol. I used to have cold beans on toast, which is nice. And old school salad with scallions, beans and boiled eggs. Great choice in pandemic times. Nobody will come within 2 metres of you after eating them and after digesting them. It'd be at least 4 metres. I remember back in the day when that was on the menu in Darcy household back in Kildare. I had a date to go to the cinema, and I'd eaten the scallions, and then I remembered, oh, I have a date. Because scallions, I don't know what it is about scallions, but they probably are, they give off a bigger sort of bang than onions. So how am I going to solve this now? How am I going to solve this? I'm sitting beside this person in the cinema, and I've had scallions, and I thought to myself, right, if you brush your teeth, it cleans your mouth and you get a nice minty thing. And the scallions are hanging out in your stomach. This is the way my 13 or 14 year old brain worked. If I swallow the toothpaste, then that'll get rid of the smell completely. So that's what I did, like an idiot. Swallow the toothpaste to try and counteract the smell of the scallions. Needless to say, didn't go well. The whole thing didn't go well. The old school salad you made and described sounds delicious and is absolutely spot on, bar the cold beans, which is what cowboys used to eat out of tins in the old westerns. My mother always had beetroot and mayo and paprika on the eggs. Ah, yes, paprika on the eggs. We weren't that posh, Orla. And there would have been beetroot there, but they didn't have it in the local shop. And then the beetroot, the way the beetroot might bleed into the eggs, so you'd have your pink hard-boiled eggs. Oh, the memories, the memories. 5 on 5 5 on ray at rte.ie. Here we go.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for your text. Now, for the last 10 years or so, you would know exactly where our next guest would be on the last Monday and Tuesday in August at 8 o'clock. He'd be in the dome and you'd be sitting down on the sofa watching him. Good afternoon, Dahi O'Shea.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you today?
I'm good. I was disappointed yesterday for you and everybody else down in Tralee that they've had to cancel it again this year.
Yeah, to be honest, Ray, we worked very, very hard when we knew it wasn't going to happen last year. We were even looking at the October bank holiday weekend for last year's Rose, and then we realised that wasn't going to happen. So we were all gearing up for summer 2021, but it was just the numbers of coronavirus that came out after Christmas and the New Year. Mm. You were talking 6,000-7,000 a day for a while, and even though things were going in the right direction recently with vaccinations being rolled out and everything, we probably knew it wouldn't be happening during the summer, maybe about 2 or 3 months ago. And again, we were looking towards October. But as you know, Ray, it was a very, very big call to make again. But listen, when you look at the big picture, it was the right decision. We want to keep people safe. And really, like, the backbone of the Rose of Tralee, Ray, is getting people from all around the world to come to Tralee to meet each other.
Yes.
And the coronavirus doesn't allow for that.
No. It's exactly what it likes, but it's exactly what we shouldn't be doing. You know. So you're getting people from Australia and America and different parts of Europe and the UK, and they're all coming. They're sitting on buses and they're gathering in tents, and the coronavirus will be going, yippee, yippee, yippee. So you're not going to do
that. We'll have a field day. You know yourself, itself, Ray, you'd have 10 or 15,000 people out on the streets.
Yeah.
The dome itself holds over 2,000 people. Again, as you said, the coronavirus will be jumping up and down.
Yeah. That's 2 years in a row now, Di. And you look like it's something you look forward to every year. You really, really enjoy it.
And you know what, Ray, you're there 5 years before me. There's only one way to go doing that show, and that is to go down there and have a ball and enjoy yourself, just like you did before me. Yeah. I go down there, Ray, and I have a load of fun. I go down there with the intent and having fun, and I have a load of fun down there. So like this time of year, you'd be going through all the regional processes, really, really looking forward to what was happening during the summer. Then in maybe the first week in July, somebody would send you a picture, usually one or two of the lads down in Tralee, the dome going up, and again there we'd have a bit of excitement about that, a bit of excitement all around the town. And as you know yourself, Ray, and everyone else knows who's listening, the excitement all around the town of Tralee for the week or 10 days is brilliant.
And it's a big earner, isn't it? I'd say a lot of people depend on the Rose Tralee Festival. It's their Christmas.
It is, and you know, it's like the Galway races for some people, it's Listowel races for Listowel, and the Rose is the same for Tralee as well, because people, I suppose, they see it on TV Monday and Tuesday night, but maybe not realising that there is a 10-day festival built around the two nights on TV, what it means to the area, probably between 10 and 15 million every year, and to be missing out on that last year, and again this year, Ray, like I say, I feel bad for the Roses, I feel bad for the Rose Centres, the committee down there, all the volunteers, the thousands of volunteers every year, and the people and the town of Tralee, like your heart would have to go out to them.
It frees you up a bit then for the summer to spend time with family.
Yeah, there is that, but I have a few different series with TG Carr coming up during the summer as well that keeps me out of trouble. But yeah, the end of the summer will be freed up like I had last year. But Ray, this is the last time I'll be able to take it easy for the month of August, so I intend to enjoy myself, probably go down to Kerry, back home to Dingle for a few days as well. But listen, you know the fitness regime I go into, Ray, coming up to the road.
But that's my other worry, because you do. Yeah, like, you know, you start getting fit and you watch your diet and watch the drink and all that sort of thing, and you go from whatever type of diet there is to this sort of Rose Tralee diet. It's like a superhero Rose Tralee diet.
Yeah, but the underpants and the inside, Ray, there's no difference.
and the bright red boots on the outside.
Listen, the crack trying to get into that. But to be honest, all jokes aside, like say, I don't do Lent and I don't do the beginning of the year. The Rose of Tralee is my Lent. Right. And like I would drop a stone and I'd would go you? Down there, as I said, in great form.
Yeah. And ready for it. Yeah.
I'm ready for it, but like I'll have compounded COVID weight on me going into 2022. I'll have to start training in September.
But there'll be a pent-up appetite on your part, on everybody else's part, for the Rose of Tralee when it will return in 2022. Of course it will.
Yeah. And that's it, because as I was saying, say after last year, after the disappointment of it not being on last year, we were all focusing, say in October, November, coming into, okay, 2021, lads, we're going to make this a big one. We missed it last year. World's getting back on track. And we find ourselves in the same position again this year, Ray. So yeah, like say, for example, like this time last year, we didn't have a vaccine. We're in a totally different place in the whole world this time compared to this time last year. So this time next year, like it'll all be behind us and we're going to move on. And yeah, I'd imagine like all the stops will be pulled out and we'll have 3 years of energy focusing in on 1 week, Ray. And we'll be like, do you ever see calves when they leave the shed for the first time? Right?
They're booking and all.
The problem is they go straight for the electric fence. That's the problem, right? And that happens to me on occasion, so I'm just going to try to avoid the electric fence.
Listen, a big day tomorrow, your birthday. Happy birthday in advance.
Oh, we said cheese, Ray. Thank you very much for that. Yeah. Do you know what? I'm pushing on. I'm 45.
Oh, are you? So you were able to register then for the vaccination, were you?
See, this is the thing.
That's
it's
tomorrow, isn't
it? 40 it's moving to 40-year-olds tomorrow when I hit 45. And if I was only 45 last week, I could have registered. So anyway,
right,
good news tomorrow.
You're going
I can
to do
sign
it.
Up for
okay.
the vaccine.
Well, happy birthday to you. Listen, congratulations on another great season of the Today Show. And it was challenging, but I suppose you got to do things that you wouldn't normally get to do and got to talk to people that you wouldn't normally get to talk to.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the silver lining in all this, Ray, because even, like I said, this time last year, again, we were in such a different place. And like with shows, like I said, they'd even stopped Fair City, Winning Streak and all these shows. So we were there saying, what's going to happen with us? And then I think they said, OK, hang on a second. There are lots of people at home, lots of people depending on RT1 television to keep them going through it. We changed the themes of our own show, I suppose, Ray, where we stayed away from all the heavy serious stuff because... what you have after our show is Nocht and the news, and they do the job, a fantastic job they do, but it's very, very serious. So we were saying, why do we have to be so serious? So we took a lighter look at all these topics and we stayed away from the heavy stuff and we had a load of fun. So we brought that into September. We were lucky enough then to get Sinead Kennedy on board for Monday and Tuesday, which shook the whole thing up again, Ray. So we had good fun. But as you say, we were doing lots of Skypes and lots of Zooms and got to speak to people we may never have spoken to.
Yeah. Listen, you were there, right? And you mentioned Sinead. Sinead's off on maternity leave. She gave birth to a lovely baby girl, Indy, at the end of March. And so you've had co-presenters there. I'm looking at the list here. Rachel Allen, Una Healy, Elaine Kinsler, Eunice Power, Emer O'Neill, Nuala Carey, Stephanie Preisner, Trishana Archer. What's going on? What's going on? Are these people all auditioning for a job or is there a job or what's going on?
Well, I suppose, like, as Sinead went out on maternity leave, she had 10 weeks to go. So they just decided to try out a few different people in with me for the afternoon. And we Blonda Tracy and the rest and Emer and all the gang we had different presenters. But listen, it was good fun. It shook it up a bit as well. And we had a new presenter Monday and Tuesday. You're trying
Who's
to,
your favorite?
To know somebody. listen, Ray, they were all my favourite, you know.
Of course, yeah.
But listen, it was a bit of fun for me as well. And I think it was a bit of fun for people at home. And I think people at home enjoyed a bit of a shake-up. But I think they will be happy to see Sinead coming back in September.
Yeah. OK. Well, listen, great talking to you, as always. Say hello to Risa for us. Enjoy your holidays and good luck with the projects for TG Cahir. Gurmaga dai.
Thank you, Ray.
Slán, stay safe.
Slán, fall.
Bye-bye.
Slán.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the prize for our quiz of today comes from the people in Castleknock Hotel all this week. With their Missed Moments packages, you can choose from two dedicated packages designed for celebrating birthdays, anniversaries and date nights that you might have missed last year. Balloons, bubbles and cake are on the cards and you can find out more at castleknockhotel.com. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock, answer five questions each. And the qualifying question is, in which county would you find Tralee? 1850 715900. That's 1850 715900. And we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock. Now, you might remember a couple of weeks ago, we spoke to Yvonne Moroney and Donny Ryan about Yvonne's recovery from her addiction. Both Yvonne and Donny are involved in the North Tipperary drugs charity Karma, spelled C-A-R-M-H-A. Which stands for Connection and Recovery in Mental Health and Addiction. And Marie was mentioned a lot. She's a psychiatrist. She and Donny set up Karma together and we decided that we would talk to Marie as well. And she joins me in studio. Marie, up a bone.
Very good.
I've been practicing. Good afternoon and thanks for coming up. So we've loads of things to talk about, Marie. We'll start with you first. So you're originally from Norway.
I am, yeah.
Why did you come to Ireland?
Oh, I came over here to study medicine back in 2001. I guess I just wanted to study in English and get away from Norway and see the world a little bit. But so I came over here, studied in Trinity and then I kind of forgot to go home, I guess.
Right. And is that something a lot of people from Norway do?
They do, yeah. It would be fairly common for Norwegians to study abroad. So it would be very much a done thing. It's very much promoted in Norway. So yeah.
But most of them go home after it.
Most of them do, yes. But I sort of, you know,
okay.
I felt a little bit of the pain of the Irish people and I was quite fascinated, I think, by that. And
what about us fascinated?
Well, I think, well, first of all, it's, you know, in terms of your outlook on life, I think things were, you know, you're a bit more laid back and a little bit not taking yourselves too seriously. Norwegians are fairly really stern and head down, and you know, and the openness of you know, being able to walk down the street and say hello to your next door neighbour or people walking down the street, and that just doesn't happen at home. There's something kind of, was something familiar or something comforting around that, but at the same time, you know, you've, over the years of having lived there, you know, you see, you feel the you feel a bit of that oppression, that intergenerational trauma that comes through as a, you know, in in and the people,
we'll
and
talk
the ways
about
of coping, which is clearly one of the things would be
drink,
a bit of crack and a bit of drink, exactly.
Yes,
and
I think it's self-medication.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we'll talk about that a lot in a moment, but just, so you did medicine and then you went into psychiatry.
Yeah.
Why did you choose psychiatry?
I had my own experiences of mental health issues in when I was in college. I took a year out of medicine and did a few other things and tried to get myself back on track again. I had an episode of depression and I kind of had to take a while to sort of you know, figure myself out and where I was going. You know, medicine is obviously tough you know, I was here on my own and you know, very little support and things like that. So yeah, it was a tough old run, and I think that initially sort of scared me away from being interested or doing something that I was actually interested in, which was a mental health piece. But I didn't think I could do it because you know I've had my own difficulties.
Then I guess
as time went by, you know,
I would see that as an advantage.
It is. I see it as an advantage, and it certainly has helped me greatly in my career. I think, you know, seeing working in the hospital medicine, and you're seeing how little time you actually have to, you know, to really hear people, and you know, it's very much around what part of your body is in trouble, not sort of like, well, what goes on in the whole, you know, as a whole. Yeah. And I think the pivotal moment was the moment when I was on working in a stroke team in Tala, and we had a lady who had a massive stroke and came in, she was in her 50s, and we were so busy looking after her, running around ward rounds, and it wasn't until the day I sit down to discharge her that I realised her husband had died the day before she came in and had the stroke. And you know, when you, it just kind of went to the core of, you know, when you're really seeing someone so regularly and you know, don't really realise what goes on in people's lives, and how, you know, I just, like, that's not how I want to.
Okay. But you did psychiatry then, and you practiced psychiatry within the HSE.
That's right.
Okay. So give us an example of a typical day. How many referrals would you have of a day as a psychiatrist working in the HSE?
So I guess typically you would run clinics, and, you know, depending on what area you're working in, and obviously some regional variations, but by and large, you typically would have about, you know, full clinic, you know, most of the day or half a day, where that would be somewhere between 12 and 20 people in a morning, kind of a thing.
In a morning? That 9 till lunchtime? Is that 4 hours?
Yeah.
So if you had 20 people, that's 5 people an hour. That's 12 minutes each.
That would be, in some areas, that would be typical.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not stopping for a break, for a cup of coffee or anything.
No.
Okay.
So exactly. So, you know.
And these are people with psychiatric problems, mental health problems.
And human suffering, which is immensely complex, and but I mean, it's different when you have a new person. You know, usually when you have a new, that'll be kind of a repeat clinic or whatever, and with a new person, you generally have an hour or so with the person.
Would you explain to our listeners about the difference between, you know, the talking model and the medical model, and you as a doctor, mm-hmm. and then doing psychiatry within a sort of a medical framework?
Yeah.
That's what you were buying into, really, weren't you? The medical model.
Yeah, that's what I'm trained in,
yes.
I guess.
So would you explain that in the vernacular to us?
Well, I guess, you know, psychiatrists are trained to diagnose and treat, I guess, mental illness. You know, in terms of the type of treatment that we have at our disposal, is more of a coordination role, in terms of, as well as the medication role. So, you know, we would typically assess somebody and formulate a bit in a diagnosis, and then come up with the treatment plan, and then, you know, refer to whoever else in the team might be most suitable to take it on. So that often means that, you know, most of the time people should have a go at other types of treatments before medication, say, you know, some talking treatment or other different supports or practical supports or, you know, all of that. But, you know, oftentimes or majority of the time, those supports aren't readily available. And also a lot of people are also on medication at point of entry, or you know, but when they're referred by their GP, they might have been started on medication already. So the majority of people almost come to the mental health service on medication.
On medication,
yeah.
And of course, to write a prescription takes, you know, less than a minute.
Yeah, well,
talk therapies are an hour long thing.
Well, I mean, it's so an hour. It's usually an hour if you access psychotherapy or with a psychologist.
Yes.
You know, in terms of deciding on medication, you know, it is I guess you know, complicated enough.
Yes,
both
it is.
whether you're you know, deciding whether to prescribe something or not, or what, or
Okay. So why did you, Marie Uppabowen, leave the HSE?
Yeah. So I guess for a lot of years, I would have found it very inadequate to, you know, to diagnose people and give them a prescription and off they go. And most of the time people tend to, you know, go around and around and, you know, not really get to the root of the problem. I found that difficult. It was almost like I feel you prescribing people with a temperature, some paracetamol, but never really, you know, actually, you know, healing, helping people to heal or looking at the bigger picture. So so that, you know, when you're forced to work in ways repeatedly that you sort of, you know, it's a bit of a discord with your own moral beliefs. And also when you feel that you can't treat people the way I would have wanted to be treated myself, because of the complexities of the system, the pressures of the system, the way, you know, it's it is a lot of factors that come into play. You know, it's not as easy as, you know, we'd like to work differently, but there's so many barriers to working within the system in a different way, and particularly that in a different sort of more strength-based way with people and supporting people throughout the journey, not just when they're
so unwell. You arrived at a place where what you wanted to do and how you wanted to treat your patients wasn't possible within the framework of the HSE.
Yeah.
Okay, and you decided to leave. So how did you believe that your patients should have been treated?
Well, first of all, I would say they would not be my patients.
Okay, sorry. Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
The people that you see.
Exactly.
I don't like service users either.
No, I know. There is no good way.
There is no good word.
No. Well,
the people you see then.
Right. Yeah.
The people
who
come to you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
So I guess if where I would be coming from is that I would see the role of a trauma and experiences of trauma in people as a very much an underlying factor in a lot of mental health issues and addiction issues. And I think, you know, not that you need to provide trauma treatment to people. I think people kind of mistake it for when you talk about something called trauma-informed care. They think, oh, you have to treat everybody's trauma. But I think, you know, the way I wanted to work was very much around having an acknowledgement of that there are a lot of people experiencing trauma, and that a lot of mental health issues and addiction issues and the way people present to our services are rooted in that and are typically ways of coping or managing emotions or trying to regulate emotions or lack of regulating emotions, and that, you know, comes out in different ways.
Okay.
And
so we hear about self-medication when it comes to drugs.
Yeah.
And I've come to know what getting out of your head actually means. So it's to try and numb the pain.
Yeah.
It's to get out of this place, this space in your head, which is causing you terrible turmoil, and it's just not a nice place to be. So people numb themselves.
Yeah.
They anaesthetize themselves with drink and drugs. Right. So there's no point in adding more medication to that then, is there?
There is always a role for medication, right. And I wouldn't advocate for no medication at all. But the problem is that people tend to, without being fully informed of the effects of them, and also people tend to start relying on them quite a lot, because the message that typically we are sending to people is that you're unwell, you're sick, you have this thing that you're not going to recover from and you need to keep coming back and taking your medication, otherwise you're not going to get better. Whereas human beings have an incredible innate ability to heal and to recover, you know, themselves. It's just that they need support to do that. So it's, you know.
And the structures within the HSE aren't built for that sort of treatment.
No, and I think what typically would happen, particularly with people that have experienced trauma, is that it's very easy to, you know, to get re-traumatized by certain patterns within the system of, you know, things like, you know, being rejected or placed on a waiting list or not validated in terms of their, you know, if you tell someone that actually what you have now is a disease X, Y, and Z, that's what's wrong with you, and not sort of, well, actually all those horrendous things that you've gone through in your life or the difficulties you've experienced, that sort of doesn't matter because it's this disease, you know.
Yes.
When that is the narrative that you're faced with, then you also stop believing in your own ability to...
Well, let's tease out, say, you know, mental health issues and addiction.
Yeah.
And one of the things we talked to Donny about, who yourself and Donny set up Karma, was this dual diagnosis when it comes to addiction and mental health issues. And that for a lot of the time that people were, if they had addiction, they were told by the mental health services, we can't treat you until you're sober.
Yeah.
And when they become sober, of course, their mental health issues are exasperated because the pain they're trying to numb re-emerges. So that doesn't work for them. So there should be some sort of situation where you can treat both in parallel. Does that not exist?
Well, parallel actually sort of, it does exist, but parallel means typically like actually separate,
but at the same time. But never so the what train you're should meet. Okay, yes.
Exactly. What you're talking about is probably integrated, really.
Integrated, sorry, yes.
So
like temporarily, they're happening at the same time, but they're not integrated.
Typically, people might go to the addiction service for their addiction problem and mental health for mental health problems, and then there is lack of communication and joined up thinking and, or that it is back to the old way, which is serial kind of model of treating things where you deal with one first and then the other.
That's sort of so neither, outdated now. But does it still happen?
Outdated, but still happening.
Still
very
happening
much
in Ireland.
So.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Is it not accepted? And this statistic came up when we were talking to Donny,
that
over 70% of addiction problems are caused by some sort of childhood trauma. Is that not scientifically accepted now? No.
Well, I think the difficulty is that it depends on how you define trauma.
Right.
And
how would you define trauma?
So, like, typically, you'd think in terms of like medical model, it'd be in terms of diagnosing post-traumatic stress disorder, for example. You know, it needs to be quite significant trauma to you know. But the reality is that a lot of trauma isn't really what happened to you. It's the experience of that event within yourself and in how you interpret that situation and how you know.
Okay.
Cope
with it. So one person's trauma may not be trauma for somebody else.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, but there are things that are, like nobody would disagree that they're traumatic. Like
of course,
you know, childhood sexual abuse,
exactly.
Physical abuse,
yeah.
Neglect.
Know that you know the more what we call adverse childhood experiences that you experience, the higher the risk of developing, you know, both addiction, mental health issues, physical health issues, and later in life. And
some of these traumas can happen at such a young age that people may not be aware of them consciously.
Absolutely. And that's what's interesting as well. When you say, well, what's the rate of how many people have experienced trauma? I think there's so many people who experience trauma who don't realise that it's trauma. And I know Yvonne was talking about that last time she was there, you know, in terms of she didn't put the connection between her addiction issues and her experiences. So when you say, well, you know, have you experienced anything traumatic in your life, a lot of people would say, no, I had a really great, happy childhood. It's not really happened to me. But oftentimes that's all in context of what's normal in some people's lives or, you know, and others, you know, that and how they interpret that situation.
Oprah Winfrey and this guy, Dr. Perry, have a new book called What Happened to You? And we spoke to Edith Eger recently as well. She's an Auschwitz survivor. And she's a psychotherapist, I think. And her question to people is, when did you stop being a child?
Yes.
Those questions are similar, aren't they?
Yeah.
So there seems to be a sort of a school of thought now that's all converging on this trauma theory for mental health and addiction issues?
It's certainly, it's big, you know, I guess it's huge awareness in recent years around it, which is good. I think it's followed on from sort of, you know, we talked about recovery oriented care within mental health and reform of our services and things. And that is sort of now moving and shifting in towards more trauma informed care. It's very much, you know, I know Gabor Maté also speaks to say it's not what happened to you or it's not what's wrong with you.
It's what happened to you. Yeah.
Exactly.
So practically speaking then, if it's trauma-based care,
trauma-informed
care, sorry, mm-hmm. That's labour-intensive, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. It does require a certain amount of resources to be able to work with people. And I guess that's the difficulty. But at the same time, you know, I guess it's in the long run. Treat people, you keep seeing people revolving through our doors and, you know, and all the costs of that, you know, in terms of how people present in other services as well, not just in the mental health services, but across the board in terms of acute services and criminal justice systems, you know.
Do you think people who are studying medicine now, do you think they're being taught about trauma-informed recovery and treatment?
I do not think so, Rick.
No.
But they're the people, in my opinion.
But they're the people who are going out into the HSE.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you felt so strongly about this, Marie, that you turned your back on a permanent pensionable job in the HSE with prospects of promotion and increase in salary, consultancy, you know, whatever that is, 150 to 200,000 euro.
Yeah.
To set up Karma.
Yeah. That's right. I guess.
You're not even a native of this country.
No, maybe that's a good thing.
Is it? Yeah.
I think when you believe in something, you know, I'm obviously clearly not financially driven in that sense.
No.
That, but, you know, when you, I think, you know, I also have a brother who's in recovery now, but is in addiction. And even in a country like Norway, you know, you see the similar, challenges around accessing care and the right help and back home in Norway. So, it's something that I've been passionate about for a long time. And then I, you know, started working with Donny within the HSA, and we had very similar kind of ideas around, you know, frustrations around how people were being treated within the system in terms of dismissed and blamed and excluded and, you know, people struggle to access any help. People with addiction and mental health issues. So that's, I guess, coupled with that, we did some research in our needs assessments and looked at what people actually want and feel they need. And then we got together with a group of people with the addiction and mental health issues themselves. There was a bunch of family members and our local community and everybody. There was such a hunger to do something.
Yes.
So that's, it sort of developed quite organically. That kind of, I guess,
and it's
spurred
working.
Us on. So yeah, it's been a long, hard journey, clearly. And obviously this last year has made it a challenging situation, you know, even more challenging. So, but what you see is that when you do, you know, like, I mean, the whole thing around Karma is that we have, you know, it's a free service and we have, it's easy access to some help and some care in a non-judgmental, you know, environment, and that makes a huge difference.
And you have people like Yvonne who are there to welcome you in and say, I know what you're going through. I've been there too.
Yeah. So we have peer support workers of people with lived experience. Yeah.
And can people recover from childhood trauma?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And part of it is that love and affection and acceptance, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounds a little bit hippie now, Ray, but you know, but
here's the problem. But this is a problem though, isn't it? Because
it is.
It's self-fulfilling, because if you train people up in the medical model, And they go into positions of power in the HSE. Mm-hmm. They only recognise that as the way of doing things. They don't recognise what you and Donny are doing down in Karma.
But I think people don't get the opportunity. You don't see recovery happening and healing happen within four walls of an office. Do you know what I mean? So like what I felt it made a difference to me is that you need to get out there and hear people and actually listen without intention of treating or doing anything, but actually listen and also see people in a different environment within the community. You see that people have incredible, potential and skills. People who would have come in and out of my office, who I kind of thought, oh, Jesus, they'd never get better,
Yeah.
But actually, you see them in a different environment and people do get better. Mm. People do go on and do amazing things. And like Yvonne, obviously.
The vision for change was there. And now they have sharing the vision. And one of the sort of the building blocks of that, both of those documents, was these community mental health teams, which were supposed to be teams of psychiatrists, psychiatric nurses, psychologists and all within the community working out of primary care centres.
Yeah.
Have you seen that on the ground?
Well, I guess that is how the structure of our services are. They are mainly community based.
But yours are, yes.
In general, the HSE mental health services are community based services around the country. And then you'd cover inpatient care at the same time. But obviously we close down all the major hospitals a lot.
Yes.
For good and bad, but it's the difficulty is obviously recession hit and we didn't have enough funding to actually properly fund the community care that was
What happened was we saw American doing this, taking everybody out of institutions and this community care model, but we weren't prepared to do it properly. We're in some sort of no man's land
so
now.
Often what happens then is that the people who used to be in psychiatric institutions are now in prison, typically would happen, there's a migration towards that, but
so there's a huge amount of trauma among prisoners as well.
Massive, huge. And you can imagine the re-traumatisation that people are experiencing within
prison.
Those systems.
There's no hope, really.
So, but there is...
Yeah, and what about just play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
If you accept that childhood trauma, brings you to addiction because you want to self-medicate or whatever, does that let you off the hook in a way,
Yeah, I think a lot of people have that argument that sort of, that we're meant to be all, poor them and they don't know better and like that kind of attitude.
Yeah.
I think that is kind of seeing it in the wrong light. That's not trauma-informed care to just sort of say, they can't help it, so we let everything, that is not really the point in it. What we see is that typically, when you're actually engaged with people in a really humane way, in a really compassionate way, and you develop that kind of rapport with people, you start building trust. And by and large, when you've experienced childhood trauma, you don't trust anybody.
No.
So a lot of the behaviours that you see that are like might be challenging for people
are
absolutely vital coping skills for survival a lot of the time. So but like that if what was I saying now?
the message from us today is that what you do should be included in the HSE. It's unlikely to happen. They're constantly looking for solutions and they have a pilot, a sort of ready-made pilot in Karma, which they should probably roll out, but they don't have Marie and Donies all over the country. So they have to be trained up and it takes a certain person with a certain attitude that not everybody has, and that's a problem as well. Anyway, we will talk about this again. We've run out of time. It's something we'll come back to.
Great stuff.
And that book I mentioned, which is I've read most of it over the last couple of nights. What Happened to You? It's Dr. Perry and Oprah Winfrey, and it's laid out in the vernacular, and it's conversational, and people will understand it.
Yeah.
And it's about how trauma affects mental health and brings us to addiction. Marie Apobuin, thank you very much for coming in. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurmaga Seamus, thank you very much. Now, Tricia has been on as a psychotherapist. It's so good to hear a psychiatrist highlighting the inadequacies around treating human suffering in the system. Human suffering needs to be seen and acknowledged, not shut down and closed off by medication, says Tricia. Ray, the SAOL project, S-A-O-L, on Amiens Street has been practicing trauma-informed care for women with addiction issues in the north inner city for many years. Your guest is right on everything she says. Katrina Crowe in Dublin 3. Sort of from that to salads. Jackie says, Russian salad in a tin, cubed carrots and potatoes with grey-looking peas. Heinz sandwich spread in a jar. We called it sick in a jar, says Jackie. And Mairead says, in the late 60s, Boyer's Cafe had a salad with cold beans and peas. Gorgeous and a great memory, says Mairead. We always had a salad for supper on a Sunday evening, which included potato salad from a tin. Gosh, how we lived. And Mag says, I've worked in the catering business for a number of years. Top class hotels, Ray, but never have I seen beans on a salad. Well, every day's a school day, Mags. Every day is a school day. Now it's time for our quiz of today. Today, 1st of June. Yes, the 1st of June. And our prize comes from the people at Castleknock Hotel. They want us to tell you about their missed moments packages. An opportunity for you to celebrate the things you didn't get a chance to celebrate last year. Birthdays, anniversaries, date nights. There'll be bubbles, there'll be balloons, and there'll be cakes. And you can find out more at Castleknock Hotel, castleknockhotel.com. Mary Lou.
Hello.
Hello, Mary Lou Murray, Whitehall.
Hi,
in
Ray.
Dublin.
How's it going?
You don't meet many Mary Lou's.
No, no.
Was it a Buddy Holly song?
It actually was. It was around that. I don't know if it was Buddy Holiday, but I'm kind of at that generation.
Is it Buddy Holly? Yeah, I think. But it was Billy Holiday and Buddy Holly. He had the big black glasses. I think it's Mary Lou. I think it was his song. Maybe it wasn't. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. What are you up to today?
Many times.
What are you up to today?
Well, I've been sitting in the garden, being honest.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. and Rusty, your dog, for company.
And Rusty the dog for company, yeah. He likes the heat once he's not walking in it. So it's all very pleasant.
Yeah, yeah. And you can hear the birds tweeting away there.
Oh, sure, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. And you'd go nowhere out of the country if it always went like this.
You're right there. You're right there. Who's at home with you?
Living at home, yeah.
Yes.
Three of my sons and my husband.
Right.
And then my daughter lives elsewhere. She lives in Stony Batter.
Right. And what age are the lads?
The lads are 25, 22 and 20.
And any sign of getting rid of any of them? I shouldn't say it like that.
Very little. Mary, they have it too good here, Ray. They have it too good.
I think I heard somewhere last year that the average age is 27 now. That people left the family home. Yeah.
Jesus. A friend of mine, when the kids were small, used to say 24 and out the door.
Oh,
but
yes.
I think she'd even realised that that's not that possible always. But anyway.
And I suppose if you're in Dublin, it's probably the average is probably higher. Because everything's
it is,
at the doorstep.
I think so.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly. Why would they go?
Yeah, and you're doing their laundry, feeding them, you know, all that sort of thing. They've all their stuff there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, fairly much so. No, they're very good, though. They do help out.
And in fairness, you'll miss them when they're gone, if and when
they
go. Yes, yeah.
Exactly.
You're up against Pat Malloy, who's from Dublin, but he's ringing from Ballyferriter in County Kerry. How are you doing, Pat?
Hello, Ray. How are you today?
You're out on the Dingle Peninsula. What's it like down there?
It was great, but it's getting a little bit dull. I think there's some precipitation, as the weatherman says,
yes.
On the way.
Well, that was rain. That was forecast, Pat, to come in from the west. So you're
it's either coming or it's just gone.
That's it. So you're looking. Can you see the blaskets from where you are? No, you're on the other side of the
No. I'm looking at Cianci Vale and the Three Sisters and Cook Warren.
Yeah, lovely, lovely.
Mountains and the sea.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice down there, isn't it?
Not too shabby.
Yeah. So, do you want to tell us what you're up to?
Very little today. No, it's a nice handy day today. I'm doing very little now. I'm hiding in the garden.
And have you moved down there? Are you full-time down there?
No, this is my wife's home place, so I'm just down here at the minute.
Ah, lovely, lovely. Yes. So it's
the
in-laws
are next door and the mother-in-law across the road.
So it's a bolt hole. Nice place to have a bolt hole.
A bolt hole is a very nice place.
Yes. And you can go around to Kruger's there for a little pint, sneaky pint.
Well, it has been known to happen.
Yes.
It's the same at the minute, actually, if you're interested.
Say again?
For sale.
Oh, is it? Right.
So
well, I tell you, it must be the pub with one of the best views in Ireland.
It's a fair view, all right. Now, yeah. Well, in fairness now, Quinn's Inventory wouldn't be far behind it.
Right, Quinn's Inventory, okay.
That's to keep in with the locals.
We could do a competition there to see which pub in Ireland has the best view.
Well, I'll do your research.
There you go. Yeah, we put you on a retainer. Where are you now, Pat? I'm in. Yeah, right. Okay, so it's five questions each, Mary Lou and Pat. And whoever answers most correct gets the prize. If it's a draw, you go to a tie-break situation. Or we go to a tie-break situation. So good luck to Mary Lou in Whitehall and good luck to Pat in Ballyfurser. Here we go.
Yep, that's what Mary Lou.
Good luck, Pat. Good luck, Pat.
Okay, Mary Lou, first question for you. On this day in 794, Charles the Great opened the General Synod in Frankfurt. In which European country would you find Frankfurt?
In Germany.
It's the correct answer. Pat, on this day in 1746, French troops conquered Antwerp. In which European country would you find Antwerp?
Belgium.
Yeah, correct answer. Right, you're up and going. Second question for you, Mary Lou, is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
You see, on Thursdays, I'm sort of lost around here.
What's on Thursday?
It's the cruise night off.
You mean we're alone on the boat?
Completely.
You know, I've never been completely alone with a man before in the middle of the night, in the middle of the ocean.
And this day, 1926, that actress was born as Norma Jean Mortensen in Los Angeles. You heard her there with Tony Curtis in Some Like It Hot. Can you name her?
Indeed, it's Marilyn Monroe.
It is Marilyn Monroe, the great Marilyn Monroe. And for you, Pat, have a listen to this.
I don't think you ought to be doing this to yourself, Andy. I mean, Mexico is way to hell down there, and you're in here, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, right. I guess it comes down to a simple choice, really. Get busy living, you get busy dying.
On this day in 1937, Morgan Freeman, award-winning actor, was born in Memphis, Tennessee. You heard him there alongside Tim Robbins. In which prison-based film?
That was the Shawshank Redemption.
It was indeed. Right, two all. Third question for you, Mary Lou. On this day in 1796, Tennessee was admitted as the 16th U.S. state. In total, how many U.S. states begin with the letter T? Two or three?
Tennessee, Texas... Two.
Yes. Yeah, and there are the two of them, Tennessee and Texas. Well done, well done. Similar question for you, Pat. On this day in 1792, Kentucky was admitted as the 15th state, the 15th U.S. state. In total, how many U.S. states begin with the letter K? Two or three?
Kentucky, Kansas, three.
You only said two, and two
yeah,
was the correct answer.
One,
no, two is what we're looking for. It is Kansas and Kentucky. So there you go, there isn't a third one. Right, you still have two questions to go, so anything could happen still. Mary Lou, a music question for you. Have a listen.
And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know.
On this day in 1968, that single, Mrs. Robinson, went to number one. We want to know who sings it.
Simon and Garfunkel.
Is the correct answer, yes, Simon and Garfunkel, yeah. And for you, Pat, on this day, have a listen to this. On this day in 1947, Ronnie Wood, guitarist with that group, was born in Hillingdon, England. Can you name the group?
That'll be the Rolling Stones.
It is the Rolling Stones, right. So three plays four. So Mary Lou, if you get this right, Pat can't catch you. Get it wrong, and if Pat gets his final question correct, we're into a tie-break situation. Good luck with this. On this day in 1958, Charles de Gaulle was elected Prime Minister of France. Which of these countries has a larger population than France? Colombia, South Africa, or Ethiopia? So which of those has a larger population than France? Colombia, South Africa...
I say Ethiopia.
You say Ethiopia. Well, I can tell you, Colombia is 50 million, South Africa is 59 million, France has 65 million, and you're right, Ethiopia, 114 million people live in Ethiopia.
Brilliant.
Sorry about that, Pat.
No, sorry, Pat. Well done, Mary Lou. Fair play.
Yeah.
Thanks a million.
Pat, we'll send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show mug.
No worries.
You can have your favourite hot beverage from that, looking out at the Atlantic Ocean. And lovely talking to you.
Okay, right.
Right, see you, Pat. Mind yourself. See you. Stay safe. Bye. Well done, Mary Lou.
Oh,
geez.
Thanks a million. I'm delighted.
Now, you're not going too far, but it'd be nice to be pampered and not have to make the bed and have people waiting on you in the castleknockhotel.com. And they will have balloons and bubbles and cake, and any of those celebrations you missed last year, you can have them there.
Brilliant.
With them.
Can't wait.
Okay,
that's
well
fantastic.
Done. Great talking to Mary
Thanks
Lou.
Thanks a million,
Mind
Ray.
Yourself.
Brilliant.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Claire Kavanagh has been on to tell us Ricky Nelson is the man. Hello, Mary Lou. Goodbye, heart. That's a great Christie song. So do I on RTE Radio 1. Now, when you hear the word Zorro, you probably picture the cape, the mask, the sword. But did you know that the fictional vigilante was inspired by a man from Wexford? William Lamport was an Irish adventurer and freedom fighter who ended up in Mexico and was executed there in the 1600s. To tell us more, I'm joined in studio by Chris Hayes from Hedge Radio Podcast, and he's been researching Zorro's Irish roots for his podcast. How are you doing, Chris?
Hey, Ray, how are you? Thanks
good
for
to see
me
you
up.
Again. Yeah.
I came up from Wexico to Dublin, so we're going to rename Wexford Wexico right. In honour of this.
Will we play a bit of this just to get people in the mood?
Okay.
When the full moon is bright, comes a horseman known as Zorro. His bold renegade carves a Z with his blade, a Z that stands for Zorro.
And there's loads of incarnations of Zorro on the small screen, the big screen over the years. And who would have thought that it can all be traced back to Wexford Town.
Yeah. Back to William Lamport in Wexford Town, right? In 1611 is when he was born. And the thing was, of all the Zorros we've seen, you've never seen a small, pasty, kind of prawn-coloured fellow with red hair play Zorro. And it looks like that's actually what William Lamport looked like.
Right.
Lamport's family would have came here with the Normans. And I think that's a bit of a hang-up we have in Ireland. Like, oh God, you know, the Normans, he came with the Normans. But sure, he'd been here for 500 years
yes,
at that time.
Sure, so my ancestors are Normans as well,
yeah,
I think.
Exactly.
Yeah, Darcy's,
yeah. So down in Wexford, that was really the first Pale, and they would have established themselves there, and they would have been Catholic merchants in the early 1600s because the Reformation had happened, and so his family would have stayed Catholic and very much identified with Irish Catholicism and the Irish Gaels that would have been kind of Catholic at the time.
And his grandfather fought for the Irish.
Yeah, so his grandfather fought at the Battle of Kinsale. That was the end of the 9 Years' War, really, and the great Hugh O'Neill, and that was one of the first things that happened to this guy. So he was only 7 or 8, and his grandfather went off, Patrick Lamport, to fight at the Battle of Kinsale. And then on the orders of James I, after the Battle of Kinsale, his grandfather was taken out and executed.
Right.
So he was only a young fella in Wexford Town at this point. And William Lamport then was sent, he was sent up to the Friars
in Wexford. So that shaped him really, didn't
oh,
it?
Oh, that's huge. If you yes. see your grandfather taken yes. out, that's head of household stuff, you know. And he's killed on the orders of this King of England, the overlords in England, you know. So that really did shape him. And he was sent off to the Jesuits for a while in Dublin. But then in Dublin, as kind of things were going on, what was happening was the Catholicism was being kind of squeezed more and more. And then he ended up in London. And when he got to London, this was the first kind of real flash we get of him kind of like going out and taking on the world. He starts publishing these pamphlets
right.
denouncing the king. And he starts pasting them up
That king, was that the same king who was responsible for his grandfather's death?
Exactly.
You're right. So
yeah,
he had a vendetta against him.
He had a vendetta. Yeah. And he's very principled. And these kind of principles kind of like seem to be the stick with him.
So what was he saying in these pamphlets?
He was basically denouncing them, and they were right. satires, and they were kind of saying like, look, this is not really a man of faith
right.
at all, you know.
This what
is
someone, age was he at this stage?
He's only 14.
Huh?
Yeah, 14. Like, I mean, these days...
What did you achieve when you're 14?
No, this is the thing, yeah. Well, my colleague on the Hedge Radio podcast, Alan, he says he stopped picking his nose at around 11.
Right.
So like at 14, he's out putting pamphlets. If it was now, you know, he might be picked up for littering or something. But
yes.
this was fairly strong, and he had to get out of London. He had to get out of there quickly. So he jumped the ship, and it seems that around this point, he took up with some pirates. And he travelled the seas with pirates for a while before ending up in the north of Spain. Now, Spain at that time, of course, would have been like a place where lots of Irish revolutionaries went. But it was the landing in Spain that was kind of, that was what set him in train, really, to get to Mexico.
Okay.
And to continue fighting injustices. So by the time he got to Mexico, he was really sent kind of as a spy, maybe for the Spanish court, we think. And he was there to watch over stuff and see what was going on. But what he saw going on in Mexico was the Mexicans had been treated really
badly. Did Spain control Mexico at the time?
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
okay. So King Philip IV would have been there. The colony in Spain would have been about 150 years old at this point.
Right.
And there was rumblings in the colony, you know.
Ah, right.
So they were always going over and trying to figure out what was going on. And when William Lamport arrived, now at this point he changes his name, he's Gillian Lombardo. So that's important. His Spanish name, William is Gillian,
yes.
and then Lombardo was the name that Lamport became Lombardo.
Right.
So he's Gillian Lombardo. He arrived in
Mexico. Now he's beginning to sound like a hero.
Now, see, that's the thing, absolutely.
Gillian Lombardo.
yeah.
And has he become some sort of a Robin Hood sort of, you know?
Well, this is the thing, like he fought in religious wars for the Spanish monarchy. And when in Spain, he looked around and he said, the way I have to get on here is to impress people, get someone to sponsor me and they'll say, who's your man from Ireland? Like, he's really catching our eye. And they invested in him. And he basically got to move up in the Spanish court. And
right.
He got to a point of, there was one guy, the Count Duke of Olivares, who really took him under his wing. And at the same time now, he's still plotting for revolutions in Ireland.
Okay.
He's trying to get arms together to send back to Ireland in 1641. For an uprising in Ireland. But just at the last minute, the boat is literally ready to go to Ireland, and there's a boat here ready to go to Mexico. And he's like, I'm off to Mexico, I guess. And that's right. Where he went to Mexico. Whether that was political or not, because he had a girlfriend at the time who had a child out of wedlock as well. So pulling all this apart for the podcast was just like, well, what's going on?
What an interesting character. What a really interesting character.
He's just incredible.
And any idea what age he was when he set sail for Mexico?
Born in 1611, so he was like, what, 29 right. when he went off to Mexico. Arrived in Mexico. And then what he was just confronted with there, he just couldn't believe it. He just thought, like, look, this is not right. We shouldn't be treating people like this, especially in the name of God. This was the thing that, like, stuck with him all the time, this principle that stuck with him all the time. And what it led him to was writing the first Declaration of Independence for Mexico. And in this Declaration of Independence, he had the temerity to suggest that blacks should be treated as equals, the natives should be allowed hold
land. How dare he?
I know, all of this stuff. And basically then saying to the Inquisition, like, you're not fit in the eyes of God. And he got together cohorts in Mexico, and he said, we'll strike at the heart of this and we'll have an independent Mexico. And his declaration's incredible. This is 100 years now before 1798 and everything in kind of Europe that would have, like, inspired us.
So he was a complete thorn in their side.
And they did capture him. They managed to capture him, unfortunately. And he spent 17 years in prison. But the thing was, anytime that he came to trial, and they kept really good records, right? And anytime they came to trial, they wrote everything down. And he wrote his autobiography. While waiting to be there, he's like, I'm going to write everything down. That's why we've got all these sources about
right.
One of the historians we talked to, Andrea Martinez Barax in Mexico, she's translated a lot of these writings that he did. And he was able to tell us about, you know, growing up in Ireland and what that was like and the shape of things to come. But he spoke 14 languages at this point. He was able to take them on intellectually, the Inquisition.
Yes.
And they just couldn't. They were like, send him back to prison. We'll bring him up again in a while.
And he had an ally there as well, didn't he?
He did have allies there as well. He had made a lot of allies. He was very good at, like, he was obviously quite charismatic, right? I mean, you know, and then he actually escaped. And so, and that's a lot of the Zorro stuff sometimes is caught up in this. So he escaped for a night. And what did he do again? The same thing he did in London when he was 14. He printed pamphlets. He denounced the Inquisition. He named the Inquisition. He told them what they were at. He told all the common people what they were at. And he started, instead of running for his life, he started plastering them up all around Mexico.
Now, it doesn't end well for him.
No, it doesn't
end
well.
You can listen to the podcast to find out what happens
to him. Absolutely. Yeah.
But how did he morph into this fictional character of Zorro then?
So this was it. So there was his life story. As you say, it didn't end well for him. The Inquisition got away with him. But in the late 1800s, a retired Mexican general wrote a book called The Life and Times of Gillian Lombardo, William Lamport, right?
Yes.
And it was kind of like Three Musketeers type stuff, you know? And then about 30 or 40 years later in California, McCulley, who wrote Capistrano, which was Diego de la Vega, he changed the name Gillian Lombardo to Diego de la Vega, who is Zorro. So there's the line.
So that's
just
it.
I got it all out.
You did it brilliantly. Will you direct people towards it? Because if you have any interest in this.
Radio podcast, yes. And we're part of the Head Stuff podcast network, which is great for a podcast. Like, the podcast has been going for quite a while, but we recently got on board with the lads at headstuffpodcast.com. So the Hedge Radio podcast is where you'll get episode one, was released yesterday. We're working on episode two. If anyone thinks they're related to William Lamport, Lamport became Lambert, please get in touch. Chris at cranoghmedia.ie.
And he is on the Angel, which is a huge statue,
that's the thing.
monument in Mexico City.
Yeah.
So are you planning something for Wexford?
Absolutely. First, we need to get to Mexico, and maybe we'll bring a bit of it back, or we'll put a statue up in Mexico, as we'll rename it.
Right. Chris Hayes, thanks very much.
Thank you, Ray.
We'll talk again.
Great to have
That's it from us. So on the way is Cormac and Samantha. Cormac and Samantha today. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.